my 7-year-old. He has understood what death means at a really young age. He doesn't believe in killing anything unless you're going to eat it. All the anti-hunter has to do is put a picture of some Disney character that's a bear and be like, save the bears, and boom, they got him. Our marketing has to be a lot better, and the way we go about it needs to be a lot better. Oh, don't get me started on that. This expo is already starting to rub me the wrong way. I might as well just come out and say it so I can vent a little bit. Get all the mistakes done on the cheap tags, over-the-counter stuff, or whatever. You know, then when the real tag comes in, you're ready to go. You're like, you're ready. I'm choosing my fights, but I definitely want to pick some more fights. I'm fighting for my sons to be able to hunt when they get to that age. That's where it comes down to. This is Samson, and you're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
I've been blessed to harvest 22 of the 29 North American animals with my bow.
My personal 24-hour record for death threats is 88.
They will start putting two and two together and realize this is how you call bulls in.
So when I go hunting now, that's the ethos I take with me. You know, whatever this hunter's going to throw at you, you pull your big girl pants up and you get on with it.
Giant bucks are freaking awesome. They're beautiful. But you know what? I would not trade this first buck for anything in the world.
So I'm a geek. Magicians and dragons and magic swords. I kid you not, man. I'm the biggest dork in the gun business.
I'm Freddie Hartice, Hollywood Hunter.
This is Aaron Snyder.
Hey, this is Trevin Stolzers with Outback Outdoors.
This is Rihanna Carey.
Hi, this is John Sloan of the Interviews with the Hunting Masters.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, y'all, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Podcast Network.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
All right, y'all. So hopping into today's episode, I'm here in Salt Lake City, Utah, Western Hunt Expo. So you guys can expect to hear a lot more background noise in the next several podcasts because you guys know how much I love to record out here. But after 5 years, this March will be 5 years for the podcast. He is back. Episode number 2, the podcast that really turned this into a hunting podcast from back in living country in the city days. But Samson, we're here.
We're back. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago. So it's good to be back.
It's weird because it seems like it doesn't seem like that long ago, but at the same time, it seems like a different lifetime as well.
Sure. Yeah,
it's like a weird thing, you know, coming in and. I remember talking to you about starting a, you know, it's like, cause I came in and we're eyeballing each other like across the meeting room. Like mm-hmm. you're wearing a Kuyu puffy or something. And I'm sitting there with a real tree cover on my laptop and I'm like, okay, I got to go talk to this guy. I gotta like suss him out a little bit, you know, but I'm like, it's the music industry and we run a vegan music festival. So I gotta be a little tactful as to whether or not, you know, how I approach this. So I remember walking into your office, you're on the phone or something, you're talking with someone and I kind of look, I'm like, okay, how do I approach this guy? And then all of a sudden, you know, I see the elk bugling on your screensaver. I'm like, okay, that's good. Then it swaps to the next photo of like diagrammed out cuts of meat. I'm like, okay, I think I'm fine to talk to this guy.
Those are the signals I need to put up just so people know.
You
know,
oh, yeah.
It keeps the people away that I don't want to talk to. And then it, you know, sucks in the people that, you know, I want to actually have conversations with.
Yeah, and we talked for like 2 hours at that point. You put me on to a podcast to listen to and gear to check out and put me onto Elk 101 at the time, yeah. and like all of these different resources.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean, that was I think Corey had was just launching that too. So that was it was
I think it was like
fairly
the second
new.
Year of it or something. Like yeah. it was,
but when he
there
really
was some
started
stuff,
to push it out, yeah. and then that's when you know, I got a little bit more involved and was just trying to help him with his website and everything else. But it's kind of weird how everything kind of collided.
Oh yeah. Well, and I mean, really, so you're the, I mean, I was getting into hunting, but I genuinely blame you for all of this.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, it's probably my fault. So
it really okay. is. Yeah. I mean,
I didn't pursue you and stalk you and make you a hunter, but, I could have been somewhat of the catalyst.
I mean,
I definitely didn't tell you not to do it.
You opened a few doors for me and you pointed at the other doors I needed to go through and figure out. Like, you know, and everyone's got their, like, a different way they've gotten to hunting. You know, and that's part of what I love asking people on the podcast. Like, mm-hmm. from day one, how did you get introduced yeah. to hunting? What's your story behind it? Because it's so different with everyone. And then, you know, some people, they've got, like, a mentor they hunt with through, you know, blah, 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 all this, you know, through the rest of life. It was different. Like, you didn't take me out hunting and like, okay, this is how you shoot a bow, but you told me how to figure that stuff out, mm-hmm. which, you know, and there's also a big difference me coming in my mid 30s versus, yeah. you know, that somebody you're starting as a, you know, as a youth, but yeah, it's all your fault. All your fault.
So be it.
All of this money I've spent. Do you know how rich I would be?
No. You would have spent it on something else and then not have anything for it.
Yeah, I'd probably still be working in the music industry.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, man.
You'd still be in L.A. See, uh-huh, exactly. So I helped you out. You're welcome.
Sorry, I feel like I need to brush my teeth now.
Right?
Just, yeah. No, but I mean, it's been quite a few seasons. The first disastrous elk season that I think everyone's that listened to this podcast.
Well, you had to get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Everybody has, like, somewhat of a disaster. Normally, it's with, like, their vehicle or something. But, you know, some people cut themselves, drop arrows.
Some people knees break down.
You went for it, you know. Double. What'd you do? Both knees, right?
Both knees, yeah.
Both knees.
Yeah. The second day was the first knee. Mm-hmm. Third day was the second knee. And, oh, they're just a little overworked. I can push through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, not so much. Not so much at all, but.
Yeah. I remember the first conversation I remember after you got up there was that there's no elk, there's wolf tracks, and my battery and my battery packs are almost dead. And it just and every message was like, I'm at, you know, this percentage, and then I'm at this percentage, you know, just going and going. It was, I mean, that could have been a podcast in itself, just kind of the play-by-play, you know. You know, the one thing is, it's good you didn't go up there just without telling anybody. Because the fact that you know, that's one thing I'm glad you listened on, start a group message, get a bunch, you know, get people involved. That's something that, I mean, I solo hunt 99% of the time. I scout with other people, or sometimes I've camped with other people. I'm hunting by myself. But I, you know, I've evolved into, like, a written hunt plan. I've dropped it off at the sheriff station. You know, I've hunted where I have the sheriff on my, you know, texting back and forth, where he'll text me like, hey, I haven't heard from you in 4 days. You good? And I'm like, I'm tagged out. I'm already on my way home. but it does make a big difference. I mean, satellite messaging has changed the confidence level. And then, like, I think a lot of people that have, you know, other halves, their spouse, their girlfriends, you know, boyfriends, whoever it ends up being, before, when you had no communication, you know, they lose their mind. And, you know, going hunting was always like that, you know, that fake smile of like, oh, you're going to enjoy yourself. But they were always like terrified that you're going to get stuck out there.
Yeah.
Which, when you did get stuck out there, vehicle stuck, blow out your knees, whatever it is, before we had that, you know, you were stuck and it might take a while. I think now people have that, you know, they have a little bit of security, but I think that it's almost a false sense in some ways. Like, they just think that I'm going to pick up an in reach or a go zero or something similar. And I'm good. Well, you know, you could lose that, or that could blow out everything mm-hmm. else. If no one knows where you're hunting, then, you know.
It's like, that's just
you have to have somewhat of a network. And, and it was great because you had somebody on the Montana side. We had a couple people on the Idaho side. And, you know, then you have my wife or girlfriend at the time. she was just like control center. She was trying to figure out where everybody was, mediate, figure out like, okay, where exactly is he, and, does he need, do we need to come from the Montana side, that kind of stuff. But having that support, that if you have that kind of support system, then you almost can just go for it every single time. You just
That inReach is a tool. It's a great tool, but unless you know how to use your tool effectively, it's not going to do you any good.
Yeah.
I could have that inReach and I could reach out to people, but if I don't have the correct people in place to reach out to who are prepared to come help me, I could have been stuck out there for another four days, which, I mean, I would have been fine. I had enough stuff for that. But, that's not always the case. You're planning to be out for a five-day hunt and, you blow out your leg on, day four and you've got to wait, another 3 days before it's clear enough or something happens, before somebody can come in and get you, whatever that happens to be, you're going to be in.
Plus, you had the trifecta. I mean, you had the bad weather, you had the blowdowns, you were far in there.
And I'm not sure if you know, I released, I took this Zoom, I took it back there with me. I took it up with me.
I didn't know that.
And every night before I would crash out for the night, I'd sit and I'd just record. The first night I probably sat and I recorded for like half an hour. Mm-hmm. I just talked. But then every night it was about 10 to 15 minutes. And episode 200 is that audio. I had Clayton Markser came back on and we did like a little intro for it.
Oh, that's cool.
And then I had my editor clip together all that audio. Uh-huh. And so I don't listen to my own podcast. I sat and had the conversation.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, why am I going to listen to it a second time?
You were there.
Yeah, I was there. I actually went back and listened to that, and it brought back some. I mean, you can hear like my mood, my attitude. Like, it's a very interesting podcast. Like, you get kind of insight into where my brain was that mm-hmm. you wouldn't get any other way. And it was really cool for me to listen to that again and just think about where I was. Because now I look at that hunt, and for the other stuff I've done, I'm like, oh, that wouldn't be that big of a deal. Like, going into that hunt now, because mm-hmm. I'd be prepared differently. I have different gear. I understand how to be more prepared for that, and I probably wouldn't be that stupidly far from my truck again without knowing there's elk there.
I mean, without getting guides aside, because I know that the learning curve goes almost away if if you're going to pump $10,000-$20,000 into a hunt and they're going to do a lot of stuff for you, you go past that learning curve. Aside from that though, it you can only tell, you can ask until you're blue in the face, and you can only tell people so much. There's just a certain level you have to experience, and that's like you said, now it's like you've experienced other hunts now, then going back to there, you're gonna rethink this, the whole way of doing it. You're not going to throw a bunch of stuff in your bag thinking, just in case I need this or just in case I need that. And it's, like my pack has shrunk over time. I mean, I went on a hunt where I didn't even pull half the stuff out of my car. I mean, I literally it just stayed in the vehicle, and I was like sleeping on the ground. I was like moving around so much. I'm like, why am I going to set up a tent if I'm just going to, go? And but you just you learn over time, and that's the whole part of it. Like, going back now, you're gonna feel like way more comfortable. That's like getting dropped off on an island, and when you've never done in survival school, kind of thing. And you're just like, all right, let's see what happens.
And that's one thing I've learned too from that, is less in the pack, more in the truck. Yeah. Like, I pretty much grab all of my bins of hunting gear that I have. Mm-hmm. They all go in the truck. I lock it down and I tie it up, and so people hopefully don't F with it very much.
You just cross your fingers and go.
But like, after that experience, the one thing I learned is like, okay, yeah, you can plan, in late August, early September for it's going to, all the weather says it's going to be nice and warm and sunny. 2 days later, it can be zero visibility with snow just shitting on you. Yeah. And if you're, if you're out there with a tarp tent and and no insulation layers, you're screwed. Yeah. But if you can get back to the truck, you don't have to cancel your hunt. You don't have to go back home.
Yeah.
And that was one thing, I mean, I've just learned that a lot, is committing less to areas, just having all my gear in the truck. What is it? What does it hurt to have an extra bin in the back of the truck? Nothing.
Yeah. A lot of times I even, you know, my last five or six hunts, I tried to get there at least a couple days early, and that's made a huge difference. It has screwed up a couple of my hunts where I've shot the animal on the first day, done that a few times now. So it's like hunt's over instantaneously.
It's like quote unquote screwed up. It's like, well, okay, you know, harvest, but you didn't really get the hunt.
There's both sides of the coin. You know, there's people that pass on a lot of animals because they want to be out there in the woods and be out there a lot. But, you know, and then there's the other person on your shoulder saying, shoot that buck or shoot that elk, you know, because you've scouted for 3 days already. You kind of know what's in the area anyway. And then on the opening day, you see this, either a buck you've been watching or something bigger than everything you've been watching. And it might not be something huge, but maybe it is. And you're just like, I that's the biggest buck I've seen in 4 days now. I'm going to pull the trigger on that. And then you did. You can't experience and be out, you know, all the time. It's kind of a double-edged sword. So, you know, yeah. I think the people that want to be in the field a lot, maybe they should camp more, I guess, you know. But you can go out and watch animals anytime. Some people think that, you know, a lot of people, they only do it when they hunt. They do it maybe during their scouts, but, you know, they really only, like, what's preventing you to go to that unit the same way, less the tag? You're saving $1,000 probably, but you could still drive 1,000 miles, go to an area, watch animals for a while, or go to the winter range
for elk,
and glass, you know, for like 5 days and then come home. Like, there, now you got it in. Now you can go back out there and shoot one on the first day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of in between, I guess. I kind of, we talked, you know, when we talked last, you know, we talked about times where I would go to areas and hunt, especially in California, where I was one of the only hunters, if not the only hunter in the area, and there was a lot of other vehicles, lots of Subarus. Which I don't have a problem with Subarus because I think it's the perfect camouflage. You pull up to, you know, if you use a Subaru as your hunting vehicle, no one knows that you're hunting that area. So, unless you have a bunch of stickers all over it, and it kind of gives it away. But
you just got to put like a Biden or Bernie sticker on the back.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Bernie 20 whatever. Guys lives forever. But you know, there was times where I just knew, like, I would get up there and use hikers and joggers and all these people that, you know, we'd see in the mountains and around Los Angeles or Southern California, and I would just use them to the advantage. I mean, when you watch them, the deer are so used to them that if you kind of, you know, if you sneak up on a deer in that area, they're gonna take off. If you just walk up to them like everybody else does, they just kind of stand there, and then bam, you know, it's over. So it kind of depends on where you're at, you know, what type of advantages you want to take. But, you know, it's a different world in different places. Colorado's the same way. Hunting Colorado, depending on how close you are to Denver, you can almost do it the same way. Like, you can literally walk right. If you walk pretty aggressively, like you're out exercising, it doesn't matter if you're in camo and you're carrying a rifle. That deer's just like, that's not really a threat. It might not even run away versus, like, you trying to sneak up on him.
Yeah,
and you know, you're moving
spidey sense.
Yeah,
know?
You're like, you have your boots off and you're walking at, you know, matrix slow motion. That deer knows something's up, takes off. So,
yeah, well, because I mean,
there's little things you kind of pick up on over time.
Used to picking up those cues from their natural predators, you know, from whether it's a coyote or a wolf or a mountain lion, whatever.
Yeah, 'cause the mountain lion, a coyote, everything else can sneak up on them versus, you know, just trot right in.
Well, and especially if it's a mule deer, you know. They'll walk 10 feet away and then turn back and be like, huh.
Yeah, except for maybe a coos deer. I don't think you can get away with, like, those are the crackheads of nature.
I still haven't gotten down to see them. I've chased muleys, you know, plenty of times. I've got my javelina down there. And, like, we discussed, I screwed up my Arizona tag draw this year because I'm special and I got busy.
Screwed up or just missed it. Yeah.
I got busy up until it, so I didn't get it done ahead of time. I was like, okay, I need to do my research. You got to double check what unit I want to put in for, figure that all out. Got busy. I'm like, oh, crap. I got the alert email from, like, Go Hunt, from Arizona Fish, like, from three different websites send me an email saying, hey, draw. So you're going to miss your tag draw, idiot.
Yeah.
And
it's always the day before, too. They send those out, like,
so it's
before.
like the evening, like, before, and so it's, like, your last chance
or morning
is tomorrow.
Or sometimes,
And I'm like, okay, shoot, all right. I got to do that tonight. Like, got to finish up, you know, I was finishing up some client work and, like, I sit down on the couch, I'm going to do it. And I just crash out hard and I pretty much wake up, you know, early the next morning And I didn't even remember at that point. It wasn't until like the next day. I'm like, no. So hopefully I'm going to call him up. I don't know if Arizona will let me get buy points afterwards or anything.
Yeah, probably not. No, they won't actually. I have an interesting story for Arizona. So during 2020, I didn't put in. I completely. Not that I forgot. I was so busy with other things. Plus the pandemic going on. I missed that entire month.
Yeah.
I was that far off. I never even thought of it until it was like months away. And then I get a call from. I get a phone call. I get a voicemail, and it's from Arizona that somebody turned in their tag for an elk tag, and it fell on the same time that I had a wedding to go to.
Oh.
And I was just sitting there debating, like, okay, how far is it? Can I make it? Can I do the hunt first and then make it to the wedding, or can I do the wedding and then maybe I do the wedding in camo and just bail out and go straight there and drive, drive all night and maybe make it like the last couple days, but I wouldn't be able to scout. I wouldn't be able to see it. Totally different area, like the Payson area right under the Mogollon Rim. It was a 22 north tag. I've never even been that, I've never done that area. So I was just like, that would probably just be a big waste of time. And I would piss off a lot of people. So I just, I called the lady back and I'm like, I can't take this tag. She's like, why not? I explained it to her and she's like, man, I would not like to be in your shoes.
Yeah.
Like she literally, and she even called me back like 2 days later and she's like,
are you sure?
This is going to go back. You sure? And I was like, yeah, I'm sure. I was so bummed. So
that's heartbreaking.
It is what it is.
Well, I drew my Arizona tag in 2020 as well.
Uh-huh.
And finally got it done. 4 years.
Cool.
Getting closer and closer. And, 2019 in Montana was incredible. I got into them. I finally located elk. Mm-hmm. I was in them just about every day. I just couldn't quite get it figured out. But, man, you want to talk about learning on a hunt you learn a lot when you screw up, you learn more from screwing up than being successful.
Some people just keep screwing up,
yeah,
but if there's nothing wrong with failing, screwing up on stuff, as long as you learn from it,
because you learn more by actually doing it.
And not if you don't succeed or you don't, you're gonna there's so much stuff you're like, okay, this is how they think, or this is what they do, that kind of stuff. You definitely, just watching them,
But, it's like there's only so much you can learn then without a little bit of success. Because it was getting to the point where I was like, I'm doing all this stuff, and I don't know if I'm just in the wrong place. I was finding out plenty of stuff not to do, but I wasn't finding enough success to figure out where to go from there, which was the struggle I was having. And once I finally got into elk, found a spot, I was like, all right, some people, I had the game warden recommend this spot. One of the guys at the coffee shop recommended this spot, a little piece of state land. All right, I'm going to go check it out.
Yeah.
I go check it out. I'm like kind of hiking in to get in, go up to a glassing spot early in the morning. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to look over at this hill, kind of glass my way in a little bit, look over this hill, and it's just covered with elk. And I'm like, oh. And I go to get in, and they were everywhere on this first day.
Worse because there's just more eyes now.
It was like I was spooking them left and right, but I was learning how much I can move, how quiet I have to be, what I have to do. There's a couple of, and it's like I got
with elk, you almost don't have to be quiet at all.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. And I got distracted by this little bachelor herd of satellite bulls that was together. It was actually I think I referenced it in my podcast after that hunt. I did a solo one, but it was weird. It was like these three satellite bulls and then one cow, and I'm like,
hey, call them in.
Town bicycle.
Yeah,
she's the bit of a hoe.
She gets around.
She definitely gets around. Yeah, so I got super distracted by them and kind of forgot about the giant herd that was probably more accessible. But these ones were, like, right there. You know, it's kind of bird in the hand. And, I mean, I ended up chasing them over the next ridge.
Yeah.
Like, but I learned a ton. And every day I was getting into them, I was learning more, getting closer. And it just, I couldn't quite seal the deal. But, I mean, like, something would always happen. Like, I'd be going through a spot where they never were in the past. And you learn. You're like, well, just because they weren't there in the past doesn't mean.
Yeah.
And I could have closed the deal on it if I had been paying attention and changed my strategy a little bit and had seen this bull. There was this big old satellite bull there. And I have video of him walking past me at 100 yards. He knew something was wrong. Like, because I got in. I'm just, like, kind of tromping my way in. It was, like, the beginning. I was, like, 300 yards from 250, 300 yards from my truck. Like, it was kind of up, and so you can't see the truck from where I'm at, but it's this wide open area, just flat until you get to the fence line, you cross the fence line, and you get up into the trees. And just tromping in, I'm like kind of making sure my gear's settled on my pack, and I just hear something. I look up, and there's just a big old bull, like 250 yards, just staring right at me. And it's dark. It's still, it's before daylight. And so I'm like, and I freeze. And I'm just standing there. He's staring. He knows something's off, but then he goes back to feeding. So I drop down, and I drop the pack, and I start belly crawling. And it's snowed. It's like I'm on my hands and knees. Say again?
Rifle or archery?
Archery. So I had my bow with me. If it was rifle, he would have been dead in about 2 seconds.
Yeah.
No, in that section, it borders private, and come rifle season, the ranch hands run the fence lines and drive the elk off the, very illegally, they drive onto the public land.
Yeah.
And, thank you to the Wilkes brothers for that. Not bitter at all, but I digress. But yeah, so I'm like belly crawling, I got my bow, and I'm, like, in the snow. I'm losing feeling in my, like, knees and hands. And but I'm getting in. And, like, he'd put his head down, start feeding. So I'd crawl, and then he'd put it up and look. And I got in a ways, probably to maybe, like, I probably got 100 yards in on him. Got into maybe, moved in 100 yards, probably to about 150 yards on him, something like that. And he starts feeding towards me. I'm like, oh, hell yes. I'm like 400 yards from my truck. This bull is going to walk straight to me, and I'm going to plug him. Like, the wind was perfect. It was, like, angling across me. The sun was in his face. Like, I'm like, or the sun was coming up, like, right in his face. And I'm like, this is perfect. And then just decides, no, I'm going to start feeding this other. He gets into about 100 yards from me. He's like, no, I'm going to start feeding this other direction. Just kind of maintains this 90 to 100 yards from me, and I can't move. Like, there's no cover. If I even shift my body weight, like, he's up and looking at me like something's off. And so finally he just moves far enough past me to catch my wind and takes off. But
sucks.
It was the closest at the time.
They know. It's like, I swear they know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The minute you think you got them, you don't. It's very rare. Like, it is very, very rare. To where, I mean, it does happen, but where just every single, you could just check off the boxes,
yep.
You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you're done. It rarely happens that way.
No, it's...
My Utah hunt was like that. It was my Utah deer hunt, Zion, this couple few months back. It was scouting, was perfect. I overlaid migration patterns over, you know, Google Earth, and then went out and got to those areas, and they were a pain in the butt to even get to, but I found these, like, where two migration patterns kind of cross, found a lake that was near it. The lake ended up being dried out, and then there was a smaller lake that wasn't even on the map, which made it even perfect because a smaller water source. I would see 200 deer a day, and I didn't see one other hunter the whole hunt. And man, I was only in a mile and a half from the road, and I didn't see anybody because everybody hunts this where they actually kind of come out and get dispersed. And it was like clockwork. I sat for 3 days, watched this one spot, kept seeing these deer come through, and I saw the migratory deer just kind of keep going, and then there's some deer that just stay. Like, it seems like the bigger bucks, just want to hang out. They'll get to an area, and they'll just stay there for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And then opening day, two bucks that I was watching, one of them walked out. It was, first light was around 7 o'clock, and like at 7:15, I pulled the trigger on him, you know, and it was done. And then, you know, by 10, everything was back. That deer was in the Yeti. I mean, it was literally nice. In there, and I was cleaning up and making something to eat. And I was like, I even sat back like, I got, you know, take this one, because it never happens that way. It's never like, it's always like they come out, they go back, they come. I played cat and mouse for 6 days, twice. I went out twice. I had a tag in Idaho, and I was playing cat and mouse with these elk. I mean, I knew where they were. I knew where to get. Like, once they went up on the, they would come to the ag fields at night, and I knew which direction they were going. There's two different directions they come in and out. I knew where they were. There was nights where I was out there. I'd go out there in the middle of the night and just kind of see where they were, and they would be on the fields. There was nights where they came off the ag field in the middle of the night, and they were completely surrounding me. I mean, I had a bull probably, I could probably reach out and touch him. He was about a foot and a half from me, and he came by. I mean, just the smell of him was like pungent. And it was a full moon. I mean, you could see him. They were just moving past. They did not care I was standing right there. I just froze up. They just walked right past me. The whole herd. I mean, they didn't even go up the hills. They just kind of went out into the BLM where I was, and then they went right back onto the ag fields. They did this big loop. I thought I had them pegged, and then, you know, then it just turned into this cat and mouse. One day they would come down this side, so the next day I'd be over there, they'd come down the other side. But I could see them. I mean, 30, 40 head would come down right off the bat, you know, usually cows and calves, and then the bulls would, like, kind of peek over the hill, and then they would come down. So and then the next day I would go back, and they were on this side, and then they didn't show up one day, and I'm like, where the hell are they? So I sat there and waited, and then they just appeared on the field. And what they were doing is they were hitting this, like, sand, you know, little wash. They'd literally come down the hill, and they'd take that wash in. You wouldn't even see them. It was right next to the road. It was literally right next to the road. And they were down in there deep enough to where they could just single file right through there, and they just popped up into the ag fields. Thought I had them pegged the whole time. It was just constant. I mean, I didn't get a shot off until, you know, the second hunt on the second time I went out, you know, and pretty much the last day. But, man, drove me nuts. I thought I had them pegged. But that's what happens.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Well, I mean, you're talking earlier about that water hole, that kind of smaller water hole you found, and you're saying, what, mile and a half off the road?
Yeah, but very inaccessible. Like, break your car inaccessible.
Yeah, but it's funny because... you know, you got me started on the Randy Newberg school. Like, you got me listening to too much Randy Newberg.
No such thing. No such thing as too much.
This is true, but for a new hunter, you listen to too much Randy Newberg, and suddenly you're like, I've got to be 7 miles in from the nearest road.
Hey, he shot a bison here in Utah, and it almost landed in his truck. So, if anybody's ever seen that episode, go watch. Or if you haven't, go see it. He shoots it. Henry Mountains, and it runs to his truck like a dog and dies right next to it, like right next to the road. So
that's what I thought I was going to get with that elk. I was like, shoot, this thing's going to walk to me, maybe 400 miles.
Might as well just hand him the keys to your truck.
Yeah,
like, all right, jump in the back, let's go. Yep, trained elk.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, man, it's weird just thinking about that, all of that progression. And then, you know, this last season, I just didn't get out. That was disappointing, but...
It's going to happen. I mean, you got to remember, I took over 10 years off.
Yeah.
I mean, work got in the work, family, everything just kind of, you know, I
fish instead of hunted. And at first, I didn't think anything of it. You know, it was like, okay, when I there wasn't a lot of draws. Everything was over the counter, you know, the first time around. And, you know, California deer tags are just, you just go to Big Five, pick them up, you know, and just go. You do it when you want to go hunting. You don't even do it ahead of time. Not now, where you have a spreadsheet and all the draws and everything else. But I took, you know, I took a long time off. And then I just kind of slowly, I had probably eased back into it, but I got that bug of hunting season. I mean, I've hunted since I was six, you know, something. You know, I was always hunting, you know, hunting some snakes or whatever it was. But
dairy cows?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. I did tell you about that.
That was one of the best stories.
I assassinated a cow when I was six. I was almost seven. That was right before I came to California. I was in Texas, and yeah, I killed a cow. So yeah, it was on the res, and but that was the door opener. That was the catalyst, because my punishment for that was that I had to go to the person that owned the cow, the rancher. Well, the rancher came to the house, and he knocked on the door, and he was like, "One of my, you know, cows are dead, you know, kind of thing." My parents were like, "Whatever." My stepbrothers at the time, you know, they just instantly knew it, because I scoped myself really, really good.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, a 6-year old with 30-06 could barely even get it up, let alone, you know, I'd had drug it out, put on barbed wire fence, pulled trigger, and, you know, cocked myself in the eye bad. I mean, they walked in, they were probably 16, 17 at the time. I mean, the minute they saw my eye, they opened the closet door, grabbed the rifle, and saw that, and, you know, I pulled the trigger. That was it. I didn't even know it was going to go off. But I had the cow in the scope. You know, I was like looking at it, and I pulled the trigger. And so I had to help him gut that thing and clean that thing. I mean, luckily I didn't have to do it out in the field. He took it in with a tractor. But I was I don't remember most of it. I was so young. But my cousin's stories are pretty vivid, and they're like, "Man, you were throwing up," and I guess I threw up a few times, and he had me like literally reaching in where I would like disappear, and I was like pulling stuff out. And I guess he really trying to be mean at all, but he was like, he was really trying to teach a little kid, like, look, you know, this is how we do it. This is, you know, and you know, yes, it was somewhat of a punishment, but in reality, like, once I got done kind of throwing up and got over the, you know, the smell and everything else, they said that something clicked to where I was just like, I was ready to go.
Yeah.
So from that point on, I mean, anytime a chicken or a rabbit needed to get killed at the house, because we had over 100 rabbits.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how many chickens we had. I didn't even count it. But anytime something had to get, you know, dispatched for food that or dinner that night, that was me. And I was like, I was out the door. I mean, the minute I got a green light, I was out the door. And then I was, you know, neighbors or, you know, anybody else. So, you know, that was just kind of instilled. But, yeah, that cow had it coming somehow.
It's, you know, it's one of those things, like, you know, I'm going to be getting chickens and rabbits and probably some goats, too. And just so I, you know, some more, especially this season, I don't have Jack in the freezer.
Yeah.
I'm just polishing off the last of my elk, and that's about it. And I'm gonna be getting some animals and raising them, it's so important for kids to, like, I mean, you want to teach someone to respect the value of life. Like,
yeah, well, they just understand. See, a good point of that, my 7-year-old, he has understood what death means at a really young age. And not to be in like a morbid way, but to the point of, he understands, like, if something's alive or something's dead, he doesn't believe in killing anything unless you're going to eat it. You know, there was a situation at school. We get a call from the principal and the teacher that he was chasing this girl around with a bee. Well, the story came out that she killed the bee. You know, the bee, she, you know, smacked the bee with her shoe. He picks it up, chases her with it. You got to eat this. So, you know, it's really kind of awkward explaining this. The principal, I mean, this is Yorba Linda, California.
Yeah.
You know, the Orange County, California. So not a lot of hunters running around. Luckily, the teacher comes from a hunting background. Her parents hunted. She comes from, you know, out of the state. She totally got it. She thought it was funny. Principal, completely mortified. Luckily that the teacher was there to calm her down.
To kind of balance it out
to where she was, like, okay with it. And she's like, okay, I got this. But he is very, very in tuned with that. You know, it's very, you know, he gets that
okay, that's cute and cuddly or whatever, but if you shoot it, we're eating it. You know, mm-hmm. he gets that. And, you know, there's times where I'll bring stuff home and he's in the backyard and, you know, we had an elk in the backyard. I mean, it's a suburban neighborhood in the middle of Orange County and I have, you know, game bags hanging from the back porch, you know, but, you know, it is what it is and it seems to work, but he totally gets that and he understands that and he wants to hunt and he wants to, you know, like that last deer I brought, you know, he helped me skin the head, you know, we skinned the head for a euro mount and he was back there, you know, trying to get around the antlers and everything else. And we ate the heart that night and he was nice. Stoked on that. Now he only cares about the heart of the animal because he liked it so well. So now he's calling dibs on the next animal. He's like, I get the heart. I went to...
That's actually what I still have left for my elk is
how?
I saved it.
That would be the first thing I would eat.
It's because
The tongue and the heart is the first thing I would eat.
So I have it ready for tacos. Like, I've got it sliced up really nice for tacos and I just haven't done it yet because, like, thing. I want to, like, have somebody over. Like, I want to... Special. I don't know. I want to... And that's my thing is I'm down low enough on meat now to where it's, like...
Yeah. It's just a little, meat, whatever's there.
It's a lot more precious.
Got it. Got it.
So I'm kind of like, okay, I want to... I'm being a little more choosy with what I make with the wild game stuff. Yeah. And
organs go first. Like, I usually eat the tongue, which is, like, on an elk, like, a tongue battles for me. The tongue is right up there with the tenderloins. It's
really,
it would be like a choice. If I could have the same amount of weight, like if somebody told me like you could have 30 pounds of tongue versus this 30 pound tenderloin, I might go the tongue route sometimes.
Huh.
Like I just love it. I grew up eating that. The cow tongue, you know, it's just amazing. But the you know, three elk tongues, I think at three or four I've eaten were just been amazing. Even the mule deer tongue was great. So I know it's kind of weird and it's not like a normal thing, but and then the hearts and the livers and everything else.
Tongue,
but
yeah.
The heart is amazing. If I ever draw or even go with somebody on a bison hunt, like the tongue's going to be one of those. Like here, I'll help you pack this thing out. I just want that tongue.
Just give me the tongue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So kind of a weird thing, but
no. I remember when my nephews were up visiting. It was like when I got my turkeys a couple of years ago. You know, I was up in Northern California and. I mean, I think I've told the story on here a couple of times, but it was like the most Elmer Fudd. Both turkeys were like the most Elmer Fudd shit. Like the first one, I was down like warming up for morning workout. Like I was going to do my morning workout. And I was doing like yoga or something. I was in a pair of gym shorts, barefoot, and a t-shirt. And I get a text message. There's turkeys in the driveway. And, like, you know, I'd been watching them, and I knew exactly where they were going. And, like, all adjoining plots of land, I got permission to go hunt. So I like, throw on my Crocs, and I just haul ass two
awesome.
Properties over. And I post up, like, full post up Elmer Fudd behind a tree. And I was waiting, and they come across, finish going, you know, leave the driveway, come across the next property. Right as they come across the next property, he pops out. And he's like in his robe with his coffee and he goes to the mailbox and he's like, oh, turkeys. And he's just standing there watching them. I'm like, come on. And like, they were still kind of coming my way. He didn't scare them away. But like, I'm allowed to hunt there, but I also don't want to just blow away the turkeys that he's sitting there admiring with his coffee in the morning. Like, I'm trying to at least be considerate.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting. He finally goes back in and, you know, they come and I pop out from behind the tree and I blow away the one with, he had a good size. I mean, he was probably three and a half. He had a good, I think 10 and a half inch beard.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, it was a decent sized beard. You know, so I'd done that and I'd made, I don't know. I'd made something like, what did I make from that? That's going to bug me. I can't remember. But yeah, I made something out of that. And my nephews came up like the next week. They were up visiting. The whole family was up. And I'm like, you know, I want them to experience. I was going to try and do it the quote unquote right way, you know, and go call and like sit in the camo. And I heard it. I was going into my office. I'm in a bright like red t-shirt and a pair of board shorts and flip-flops. I mean, it's California. And I hear a gobble on the other side of the property, and I'm like, screw it. And so I grab my shot. I'm like, my nephews are there. Like, I want them to experience that. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go nail this other turkey. And this was like the full-on Elmer Fudd, like, crouched over.
And wabbits.
And like it was a full on like I went from the side by side and then snuck behind the chicken coop and then hid behind the lawnmower tent.
Do any rolls?
And I just about, man. Like, and then I found out where they were and I like kind of popped out from behind the chicken coop and just boom. And wow. And so like I gave them he was a shorter beard, and so I've got the beard actually hanging from my rear view mirror. Along with the spurs from that one, and then I gave the fan to my nephews. And I just went to visit them for Thanksgiving, and they've still got it hung up in their room, which is really cool to see. But you know, it's like getting to introduce them to that, because then they came and they went and processed the whole thing. I walked them through processing the whole thing. I almost chopped off my finger. I lost probably about a quarter to half an inch of fingertip. It was real close to the bone.
Yeah.
Because I was teaching and not paying attention to where my knife was. But yeah, I got him to walk through that, and then we grilled it up, and I pulled out. I mean, it's a turkey heart, so it's you know, you still, got about still, four bites out of it. But you know, so I sliced it up and I grilled it and some garlic butter, and they each got a little slice of turkey heart, and I think we made turkey pozole out of the Meat Eater cookbook with that.
Oh, nice.
That was really tasty.
Wild turkey is like night and day from a store-bought turkey.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's crazy when you go to, like, somebody's house and they have, like, a store-bought turkey, and you're just like, it just, everything tastes the same. Like, every part of the turkey tastes the same. Even dark meat, light meat, everything's just kind of, it tastes like the seasoning that they put on it.
Not yeah.
The turkey, but the wild turkey just adds such a good flavor to it. Like, I mean, I would maybe pick a duck over a turkey most of the time. Like, I just love duck.
See, I haven't actually eaten duck yet.
Absolutely. Like, smoked. I mean, just anyway.
I've only ever had it as jerky. I've had Canada goose, and I've had duck as jerky. Yeah. But I've never actually, like, just had duck.
Yeah.
Which I think I need to give that a try.
Yeah, I used to do Michigan. I did Michigan hunts for, like, 8 years. I'd go out there, deer hunt. I'd go to the UP, fish. And then I did a lot of duck hunting, just tons. And I would bring back deer, but I would almost never bring back duck, because I would literally, within being there for 10 days, shoot, you know, handful of ducks, and I was eating them every day. I mean, yep. It was literally, I would eat two full ducks sometimes.
Damn.
You know, I was just, I'd throw them in the smoker.
Well, and ducks are normally, possession limit, aren't they? Like, it's not
depends, yeah, it depends on where you were.
I mean, it depends on the state, but like,
you can usually have like 2 days of the possession too. It's like you can have in your possession whatever the limit is for 2 days. Like, so, you know, it's technically if you're out there camping or you never came back home, you have it or whatever. But in reality, it's like there were so many ducks on the property, my buddy's property out there, that you would, while you're out doing whatever you're doing, you'd see, you know, a few ducks, you'd run over there, kind of like what you did, but I'd just kind of run over there with a canoe. I'd like slide into these tules. I would just jam it in there as fast as I could. It was like clockwork, which was crazy because he had these neighbors that used to hunt ducks with like AK-47s, like full automatic weapons. So I was always trying to get like the ducks that flew a certain direction, because if they were too close to their house, like they would just light these things up. Like there was nothing left if they hit them. And they, you know, it was like out of a movie. So I would like always get them, like, you know, there was a couple of times where I got a couple, like, probably a couple inches off the water. I mean, it literally had just took off, and I was like, if it gets any higher, those guys are gonna, you know, swish cheese these things. But I would, like, you know, I'd hit like two, and then I would put them in the boat, and I would take it down the canal, and I'd get back to the house, and I would pluck them real quick, and this, you know, get them all ready, and I'd just hang them.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, I started hanging ducks, and you know, it's not that hot, you know, at the time it wasn't that hot, so you can hang a duck for a long time, but if you can you can cure a duck or hang it, you know, for a while, it turns into a whole different, you know, same as hanging a deer. I mean, it turns into a different animal. You know?
I did a whole thing. I think it was with Hank Shaw. We talked about dry aging and curing and stuff like that, and that was a good episode. And I want to build a section for that. But that, like, that reminds me of kind of my Colorado hunt, elk hunt, because, you know, we saw a few elk. We didn't really get into them. But the whole time, we're just plugging grouse after grouse after grouse, and we're eating them every night.
Will follow you.
Oh, yeah.
In Idaho, I was walking, the grouse kept following me. I was, like, tempted to shoot him, but I was like, I shoot him, I'm going to mess up this whole situation.
I haven't been that lucky with the grouse in Montana. They're a lot jumpier in Montana, like, everywhere I've been in Montana.
Yeah.
But like Colorado, Idaho.
Yeah, I've had them follow me multiple times.
So many other places. They're like the dumbest animal. I mean, what's the saying? If, you know, you got five grouse in a tree, you shoot them from top to bottom, you get one. You shoot them from bottom to top, you get all five. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I remember in Colorado, there's a bunch. They kind of, I mean, a ton of them would just fly in. And I always
I've seen them hide behind stuff that's smaller than their body.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've seen them just put their head behind something. Like, they'll put their head behind a bush, not thinking that the rest of their big body is just completely out there in the open.
Yeah. But, I mean, I always carry a judo tip in my quiver, so I at least, you know, have one for some small game or a snack. And so I plug this one, and I just, boom, take him out. And there's maybe, like, three of them on a log and two in front of this log. And so I plug one on the log. One on the log flies off. The two in front fly off. And there's the other one stands there, and he legit looks around at the other ones, and he was like, "Where the hell are you guys going?" And then he turns and looks down at the one that is, like, dead on the ground behind the log. And he's just looking at him, and it's kind of this look like, "George?
You okay?
What are you doing, George?" And I'm like, "Ah, crap." You know, I didn't want to waste it. I didn't want to waste one of my broadheads because it would have just jacked the broadhead behind it. I'm like, "Okay, well, I'll just walk up, collect my one grouse, call it a day." And I'm walking up, and it's looking at me. I'm still walking up, and I get from, like, maybe, like, 3 feet to this thing. At which point, I'm looking for a heavy rock. I'm like, I'm taking this sucker with me. And I'm like, "Oh, there's a rock." I grab the rock, and it finally flies away. But I'm like, "Geez, this thing is dumb as a sack of hammers."
Yeah, my first one, I hit with the quad. I literally, like, remember when I first got the Can-Am? I was in the Sawtooth, I think it was, in Idaho. And I come flying around the corner, and I see a moose up on the hill, side of the hill. So I'm like, probably should have stopped. Probably, you know, I probably could have got a lot more hurt than what the birds did. But, I mean, I came around this corner, little gravel road, almost like a little two-track. And I look up at this moose, and I hear, do-do-do-do. And I hit four of those damn things. The axle hit them perfectly. I mean, just headshot, one after another. And I'm like, you know, I thought I broke something. I didn't even know what it was. I, like, stopped. It was, you know, sun was going down. And I'm looking at this moose. I'm trying to get my binoculars out, just trying to look at it. And, you know, sizable moose just sitting on the side of the, you know, on the other side of the river, just up on the hill a little bit. But I hit, you know, and I wasn't going that fast, but I, you know, I rolled forward a little bit. I looked back, and there's these four grouse.
You expect to see parts dead on the ground. But
yeah, just dead, just headshots, you know. So I was just like, "All right," you know, you load them up and go.
Oh, but, my gosh.
And I'd hunted chuckers before, and I had eaten chuckers before. So I was like, I didn't even really, I was looking at them like they look like grouse, but I'm not even sure about, you know, because I was on waterfowl or any kind of upland bird or anything. And, you know, it took them, you know, the next couple of days eating those. I do a lot of trout. I eat a lot of trout when I'm hunting in Idaho for some reason. Like, I don't even break out a meal until, like, the fifth day. I'm, like, living off the land, I guess you'd say, you know, mostly. But yeah, they were. It was, like, addicting. It was like, I get why Randy will, like, give up an elk hunt. You know,
it's one of those things too, especially like when you're out hunting and you've been eating Mountain House for like 3 days, you're exhausted, you know, you've just been kicking your own ass, you know, hiking all over the place, covering ground. And then you have that like first like cooked
meat, like real meat.
And like we did it on that hunt, you know, we got to our next spot. We were camping. We had, you know. We cleaned those grouse. We threw them in with, I probably told this story like 100 times on this podcast, but we threw them in with, we grilled them up, and I had like a bunch of spices. We had taken llamas in. It was my buddy that ran the llamas. And so like I brought my little spice thing with me. We brought all the good cooking stuff and grilled them up. We threw it in with a Mountain House, like chicken and rice. And then we had Idahoan mashed potatoes, and we put that in there.
Still my favorite. I eat those at home all the time still.
Oh, yeah. And we did that. It was like we made like a casserole with it almost.
Like shepherd's pie almost.
Oh, yeah. We ate that for like 2-3 days. We would we had a Ziploc bag and we'd put it in a Ziploc bag and then like boil it in a Mountain House or in a jet boil to heat it back up. We'd sous vide it basically. Yeah. Like, and oh, jeez. That was just to this day one of the top three meals I've ever had because it's like. It's contextually tasty.
See, I normally hold off as long as I can. I I always take snares with me now. Like I said, the first day of camp, snares go out. I always get like, you know, whatever tag I need to get or a license. It's usually pretty cheap to get, you know, depending on the area. But,
does that count as a trapping license?
Yeah, it does.
So
yeah.
You've got
to
get
it. I used to do it all the time, but I didn't realize, I didn't know. And I, you know, I was buying a snare, and they're like, you want the license too? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and then I had to start thinking back, like, oh, maybe totally. I should have had that before. Maybe I just didn't know. You know, sorry. But, you know, you get really good at finding, like, these little trails and these little, like, you know, these holes that these animals make, like, especially rabbits. I mean, they just make these little round kind of shapes, like holes, like
through the brush.
Through the brush, even through, like, you know, sage and everything. And you could just, like, oh, that looks like a good spot. You know, every now and then you get something, you know, once in a while. Like, I got a fox in Idaho once.
Yeah.
That thing was mean as shit. I got him out of it. You know, he probably was only in there for a while. He had his arm caught in it, too, so it wasn't choking him. Like, he was completely fine. It was like getting in a chokehold, but getting your arm in there. But when I got him, finally got him out of it, it took a lot trying not to get bit and scratched and whatever. he like, pranced off a little bit, and then he just started growling. I've never seen the fox so pissed off. He was pissed. But other than that, I had a possum once. Everything else has been a rabbit, so, you know. But
I really want to get another fox. Because that was the first thing I ever took. It was in Arizona.
Oh, really?
I took that fox.
I took a fox with my Mazda once. Idaho. Thing was running. Came up from the side. You know, came out of this field. Started running alongside of me and went right under my tire.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I took that fox. I was going to get him. I was going to get a full body mount done. Like, yeah. I was really excited.
Red?
Because that was, like, my first thing.
The red fox?
No, it was a gray fox. She was pretty, though, man. Oh. And it was wild. We couldn't couldn't figure out, like, we saw she was bleeding out of her eyes, and I'm like, crap, the skull's ruined. That's super bummer. And it ended up going, it was with a shotgun. And so the pellet ended up going through her eye and out the mouth. Okay. And so it didn't damage the skull at all. It chipped one of the teeth, which was kind of cool. But then I ended up, that was when, it was in the freezer when my freezer went out. And I was like on vacation. My family was gone. I was out.
Ouch.
And for, it was like several days.
Yeah.
I lost most of my Audad. I lost my fox. I lost most of my venison. I lost like gallons of bone broth.
Ooh.
And it was just
painful.
I was so depressed. And, like, I probably could have at least saved, like, the skull on the fox or something.
Yeah.
But it was just so nasty and rotten at that point. I was just like, it was all of the bags had, like, fully inflated. And it was just, it was just that sickly, sickly, spoiled smell.
Worst feeling.
And, yeah. And I still get nervous about, because the one that went out was my newer one. That was the wild thing. That was the one I never thought would go out. Mm-hmm. The one I keep expecting to go out is, like, my older one that I got for, like, $60. It was, like, molded over.
Because they don't make them like they used to.
This thing has been on. I put it in the back of the truck and would plug it into my power inverter and drive with it rather than buy dry ice. And I'd plug it in when I was driving, and I'd park somewhere, and I'd either use an extension cord and plug it into an outdoor outlet, or it'd be fine overnight most places, and that thing worked great. It was a lot cheaper. Running that was a lot cheaper than buying dry ice, but that thing is still humming strong. Got it for $60 from some dude in L.A. Like,
wow.
I went out onto his balcony. It was, like, piled under a bunch of shit. He wanted $80 for it.
He talked him down to 60.
Or, no, I think he wanted, like, $100 for it. And I offered him 80. He's like, yeah, that's good. Come on out. And we come out, and, like, this thing, you open it up, and it's just mold everywhere inside it. And I'm like, and I kind of look at him, and he's like, $60? I'm like, yeah.
$60 in a pressure washer.
Yeah, dude. There was so much bleach. Much bleach on that thing. But, no, man, that's
cool.
That losing all that meat was rough, but I do want to get another fox. Like, just, they're cool animals, and I want, I'll admit that I want solely for my wall.
Yeah.
I just want a fox on my wall. And I was talking with Trent Marsh about this at SHOT Show. I want to start getting more coyotes, more foxes, more. I want to do some trapping so I can teach myself to tan hide. So whether that's coons, whether that's possum, whatever.
I might as well start on coyotes. It'd probably be pretty easy.
Yeah.
You know, get
five or six of them and just start.
I've got to get a better Fox Pro. My Fox Pro is like 15 years old at this point, yeah. And it was like even back then it was like the low end, lowest end.
I've never gone out just coyote hunting, but I've had coyotes come in multiple. Okay, so remember we did. Remember we're both at Golden Voice and we did that retreat out in near Borrego. Yeah. Was it Borrego Springs?
Borrego Springs.
Yeah, it was Borrego Springs. So I was on my way. I came out later because I had something else going on. I was just driving out there, and I called. Like I pulled over to the side of the road where all those cattle are.
Yeah.
Like where Renee crashed his car.
Oh yeah.
And the power lines came down. And I called in so many coyotes just with a mouth call. They were just coming in and coming in. I got a coyote to come. I could have reached out and grabbed him and put him in the car. I mean, he was literally right at the bottom.
Well, that's the funny thing, because I have a bunch of mouth calls for coyotes, like or hand calls, whatever you want to call them. I've got a bunch of those, but I kind of forget they're there. Mm-hmm. Like, because the Fox Pro I have, the area...
It's easy, just turn on.
The area my property's on, like... It's wide open, and so it's not like more closed in areas where you call for a little bit, a little more quietly, and then you move 200 yards, call again, move 200 yards, call again. This is like just wide open. You pick one spot, you call, and then you're done for the day. Like you don't really have other areas to move.
They're
to.
Either there or they're not.
Yeah, it's either you move to one side of the property or the other. But it's so open, they roam far enough. They're there. You can hear them. But you need a loud-ass call for that. And so my call just doesn't have the ump for that. And, you know, I could probably buy some external speakers, but I just need to buy a better Fox Pro. But I forget I have those hand calls, and those hand calls will get that loud easy. Like, if I pump on those things...
Yeah. You might get winded, but...
Yeah. But I forget I have, like... They're basically decoration at this point. I need to, actually practice on them for a little bit and use them.
My new thing this year and last year, calling mule deer in.
Really?
My last hunt, my Zion hunt, I called in handful. On scouting days, the whole migration, pattern, where they were going, I turned that. They literally came, they were all going through the same valley. They stopped, started going up and around this ridge and came right through. Like where I was. I mean, on the day that if I wouldn't have seen anything that morning of opening day, I would have probably pulled the calls out. I pulled in a ton of deer. Like, not, it's just a distress, like a distress call.
Like a fawn distress.
It's a fawn in distress. But I had cow elk running in, running, looking over hills. Like these cow elks were looking over, they wouldn't come down the hill. But they were looking like, what the hell's going on? But I had I had does run almost right to me, and the thing is, when the does ran in, the bucks were like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
And they came running right behind them.
I was gonna say, those fawn distress call, or you start calling that fawn distress, those does are like, they're not horny anymore. They come tearing
out.
In, and
yeah. And then there was three bucks, totally by themselves on the other side of this creek. There was it was two creeks. And they had to go over a ridge. They were pretty far away. They, in a full sprint, all three of them in a full sprint, came running over to see what was going on. And I was like, I have never seen that before. It was just something I wanted to try out. And I did. And I was thinking, if I do this too much, I'm going to have a bear come in probably. But it was amazing.
Yeah. That's the thing with calling at all. Like, if you're using
you're going to get predators.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
That's the one thing, dude, I'm really excited about. I got a buddy coming into town. He's never hunted before, and I'm taking him spring bear hunting.
Oh, nice.
He was supposed to originally come in January. We're going to go duck hunting, which a little easier intro, but he ended up having to push it back, and I'm like, well, we got spring bear. And I'm like, we could do spring turkey, but we're going to do it. Let's go shoot a bear. And so I'm super excited for spring bear season. The pressure's on for me a little bit because I want to make sure he goes in and at least has a good time. We see animals, so I'm getting
like
all
the... Are you doing like a spot and stalk? Are you putting bait? What is...
We can't bait in Montana.
You can't bait, okay, I keep thinking. Idaho, but you can, though, yeah? Right next door.
I think so. I think. Actually, that may not be a bad idea. I mean, drive over to Idaho.
Yeah.
No, I'm gonna get cameras out, and we're gonna do like
still a, do cameras there.
Say again?
Said Montana can still do cameras.
Yeah, we can do cameras. You can't effectively. It's worded a little unclearly, and I got to double check all the regs. But you effectively can't use them to hunt. So like, I can't have a cell camera out and then like check it at the bottom of the trail and like decide to go to that camera.
So you're just using it to observe wildlife, basically.
Exactly. Like I'm using it to scout, basically. Initially, like you can't use it like effectively like the day you're hunting. Let's just call it that. To which, if they'd said that, that would be more clear. But to be safe, I'm just not gonna, you know, if I'm out in the field, I'm not pulling trail cam pictures. Yeah. I have to up myself on the regs again because they change. You know how they change, but. I'm gonna get the cams out so I can use them to scout. Like I want to make sure he has a good time. You know, this is his vacation. He doesn't take vacations, and the fact like he's coming up to hunt with me, that's a huge honor for me.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like you know, he's a good buddy, and I want to shoot a bear too.
I mean, Montana's like spot and stalk. Just going on a hike. When I was in Bozeman for, I was there for Ryan Lamper's thing, and. Like, while I was there a couple days before it, I mean, just going up for a hike, you know, I went up, probably saw 6 bears, you know, 1 grizzly, but I mean, there's black bears everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like they're everywhere. Yeah. So, you know, this, you know, just seems to be all over the place. It's great, you know, there's a lot of good spots to go spot and stalk in that area. And I know that in Idaho, like northern Idaho, like I have friends that live up there. You know, they see bears constantly, you know, just constantly. As long as you don't get too thick, then it's just, the bears are there. Even California bears, you know, even though they want to get rid of the hunting there.
But the bears are there.
They're everywhere. You know, they're just so many. They're in everybody's pool. They're, you know, they're just everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, they're there.
Well, you see all these videos online, yeah, now about bears coming in, grabbing people's dogs now. And
oh, yeah. It's just a bear being a bear.
But no, bear populations are in danger, Samson. Didn't you know that?
No, they're not. Oh, don't get me started on that. This expo is already starting to rub me the wrong way. So I might as well just come out and say it so I can vent a little bit. So, like, coming in this morning to that, you know, everything was kind of slow and everything coming in. Just the employees... You know, the people that work for, they're not part of our industry.
They work for the center.
They work here, and they're just like, oh, those poor animals. Or there's a bunch of, it's just a room full of dead animals. They just don't understand, like, the conservation part of it. Yeah. Or the fact that, like, you know, like, the bear was a big topic for one lady. And she just doesn't understand, like, A, you know, how many deer that bear probably is. You know, deer and calves and everything else that they take out. Most people don't understand a bear's... A meat predator, like, you know, a lot of them. And if they knew how they did it, I mean, that would probably be, you know, if they're mad at baby killers, that would be the number one baby killer, really. But, you know, it's them just being them. But, you know, and then just talk to a biologist for 5 minutes, lady.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's all you got to know is understand that, like, we don't just wipe out animals. I mean, if we did what they thought we did, there wouldn't be any animals left. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that we put more animals here than anybody else. Like, you know, we brought elk back from damn near extinction.
Elk, pronghorn, whitetail. Yeah. Like, you can't drive 10 feet without hitting a whitetail deer on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Wood ducks, wild turkey.
Yep.
I mean, the list goes
it's a big list.
On and on and on.
But they only worry about that one, you know. That one animal.
Somebody told me one time, and it just makes the mindset clear, and it makes a lot of sense. The, like, animal rights activists, they are, and hunters, we're both passionate about animals. We both have that in common. But the difference is, us as hunters, we are passionate about the species.
Yeah.
The animal rights activists are passionate about that specific animal right there. Like... True. Yeah. It's like the difference of I was getting into it with someone on Instagram or TikTok or something. And she's like, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. We're all part of it, a shared consciousness and this and that. And how dare you kill animals? And you better not go out at night anymore and this and that. And I'm like, and I go, it was on a buddy's page, and I respond to her comment. And, you know, just the same thing I say to everyone. I'm like, listen, this is what hunters do. What do you actually do other than bitch on? Do you actually do any hands-on conservation work and this and that? And she's like, well, I volunteer for an animal rescue, and I'm planning on buying land and starting my own, like, animal. I'm like, okay. My response was, okay, like, how much wildlife habitat have you restored? So what you're going to do is destroy more habitat in order to build cages to put these animals in to save one specific animal. You're going to destroy habitat for countless other animals. Yeah. That's your plan. That really, and it just illustrates, like, that specific animal is important to me, not the species, that specific animal.
Well, here, here's your animal. Go away.
Yeah.
Like, here, take this one animal with you.
Go put it in your backyard.
And go start your whatever you're going to start.
Yeah. Here, I will not shoot that black bear. You go take it. Yeah. You keep it in your backyard as a pet. See how your dogs agree with it. And I'll go take care of the rest.
Well, I mean, it's like when we were talking to Ryan Lampers earlier, and we were, you know, talking about just, you know, him and I were talking about a lot of stuff before he walked up. But, you know, just the fact that it's just that the education is just not there, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I firmly believe that you don't, your focus as a hunter or even, you know, an outdoorsman, like putting any effort towards like anti-hunters is a waste of time. You're never going to change their mind. They're entitled to their opinion, just like anybody else, but you're not going to change their mind. So what's the point of that? You know, and you know, between hunters and non-hunters, you know, and anti-hunters, not non-hunters, but anti-hunters, we're probably 10% of the population. That 90% are people that are, they don't really have an opinion until they're swayed a certain direction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's been a lot of stuff going on in the media lately talking about, you know, how we present ourselves, everything else. That there's a lot of validity to that because, you know, those people don't have, they don't know. It's the same thing as the people that work in this building. They are normal. They are the normal. They're the 90% that didn't have an opinion until they walked in. And maybe a stuffed bear gave them, now it might give them an opinion one way or the other. To, you know, her just seeing a bear stuffed, she's like, that poor bear. But maybe 5 minutes later, somebody walks by and explains to her, like, how conservation works and how, you know, that bear was taken out because there was too many of them. They were killing each other, whatever it may be. But, you know, that's normally the case because there's, I know the tags aren't that easy to get in some areas now because the population has gone down. So it's not like we're just going on a killing spree. But if people were educated, you know, that 90% gets educated, then it would sway, you know, it would sway in our favor a lot more than it does. And it doesn't. Yeah. I mean, we are constantly getting, as a whole, we are getting our butts kicked because of multiple things. Like that opinion or, you know, the guy riding around in, you know, city with the deer in the back of his truck, you know, even though I haven't seen that.
I don't think that.
No, but I'm sure it happens because people talk about it, but I haven't seen it. I'm sure it happens, but I guess they're just trying to, you know, say that mentality. Or the guys that are like, they got a, you know, bunch of beer cans in the back and they're shooting from the vehicle. I have seen that. not on the West Coast really too much, but I have seen, I mean, I can see how people portray that. But, you know, anytime a hunter is in a Disney movie, he's a bad guy. Yeah. Or anytime, you know, in a lot of movies, you know, the hunter is a bad guy. So people are just being swayed. And the thing is the people that are watching that and they're voting for, you know, something comes up like, let's not hunt bears. And like, yeah, save the, you know, we're saying, okay, you know, there's a conservation and everything else. All the anti-hunter has to do is put a picture of some Disney character that's a bear and be like, save the bears, and boom, they got them. So, it's, you know, you have to be almost, our marketing has to be a lot better, and the way we go about it needs to be a lot better.
What we were talking about earlier is we're really great at sniffing each other's buttholes.
A lot of people sit on their hands.
Wow, your farts smell like roses. You know, exactly. It's like we talk to each other.
Everybody wants to come here to an expo and size each other up on how far they can shoot or what tag they drew or how big their animal was, but no one ever really wants to size up the non-hunter or even just spend that effort on just educating a non-hunter. Like you're educating a non-hunter by having a non-hunter come up and you're taking them hunting. Yep. Like you're introducing, like, you know, there should be a goal introduce one person a year, at least, a minimum, and get them into hunting. You know, and or just at least get them to understand it. You know, there's a lot of people that, I mean, we talked about that too earlier. We're talking about how I used to share an office with not a vegan, a super vegan, like somebody that was, you know, the biggest, we call them biggest vegan in Los Angeles.
Is it, are we talking about, let me,
yeah.
See, I never knew he was a vegan, and because he was the, okay. So I think I bitched to you about it over text one time because, you know, he and I were Facebook friends. He and I always got along very well.
Yeah.
Like, he and I were great buddies. And then he posts something about that Oregon hunter that had gotten killed. He had taken not a great shot on an elk, and he went and tracked it, and then the elk gored him to death, and then the elk died too.
Yeah.
And he had posted up on Facebook, he's like, oh, good.
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
That's what he gets.
And, yeah, like, that's what he gets, something like that. And I responded, and... And I was like, what do you mean by good? He's like, oh, you know, people that do that kind of data. I'm like, so what, you think I deserve to die? And then it got, and then, of course, all his little Facebook friends and his hippie Facebook friends come in. And I let that one go after a while because I was like, I realized.
It's the same thing. It's like, you can only do so much.
Because I went through and I'm like, hey, listen, this is how it works and this is what he does. And I'm like, you know, you're acting like this guy is a villain for doing this, but he's done more for wildlife. And then their response is, oh, you know, nice internet research and da 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 da. Oh, look, I pasted a bunch of irrelevant facts from the internet. And this, you know, you don't belong in the woods and this and that. And
well, that's the part. It's like it doesn't matter how much data you have behind it. When you get to that level of person, it just you just let it go.
Yeah. I was really tempted. One of the people talking crap was she was a full on, you can tell she was educated by the world kind of person. She had two kids and they were all surfers, and she was the one like talking a lot of crap about like, oh, you don't belong in the woods. Like, there's lots of ways to die. I was like this close to being like, okay, well, when one of your children gets pulled down by a shark and gets his leg chomped off, I'm going to call you up and I'm going to laugh at your ass because that's because you don't belong in the ocean. You know,
yeah.
I was that tempted to write something like that. And I that's when I just let it go. Because that's when it devolves into very poor decisions. But, yeah, that I think it was like a month later I just removed him.
Yeah.
Because he started hopping on my posts then and talking like
passive-aggressive
shit.
Like, they're going to put that much effort in it? Like, really? You know?
Yeah.
I've never really let... If somebody has an opinion about it, I have had people completely like, I don't like you because you're hunting. I'm like, cool. You know, that's... Well, I mean, it's your opinion. I get that. And... You do what you do, I do what I do, you know, and I'm not even going to judge. I don't care what you do. I'm not going to judge you for golfing or whatever it is. Yeah. You know, if you really care about animals, like, tear your house down, build a tree, you know, plant some trees and go live somewhere else. Like, habitat is taking out more animals than lack of habitat is taking out more animals than anything else. So quit building a bunch of, you know, quit building homes. Go, you know, don't stop using, you know, concrete.
Yep.
You know, and no one wants to do, you know, that's the whole thing. It's like, oh, I'm not going to give up. You know, we knew a lot of people in Hollywood and LA and everything else, and they are like, you know, they consider themselves animal activists, but then they go back to their big giant mansion where they have, where their lawn guys, you know, killing gophers and killing all kinds of, any animal that's on my property, get rid of, but save those other animals.
We've been to a lot of those guys' houses, and they are not like, this is not like somebody that just bought a condo in a building in the middle of a city. No, this is like a sprawling manse out in the middle of... Like the wilderness, like up on a hill,
well,
you know,
we know
that's
a couple
destroyed.
We know a couple that complain about hunting and have bear rugs in their house. Yeah. So, that, like, there's a few that are I thought was fairly amusing that, you know.
Oh,
I'm like,
gosh.
Is this fake? No, it's real. And I'm just dumbfounded, like, thinking, like, all those times you're giving me a hard time about, you know, those poor animals.
Jeez.
You have a bear rug in your house, which... I would take gladly because it was a pretty awesome barrel.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Well, man, so say, you know, say whatever. You're working a job. And, you know, some guy sitting across the table from you notices you're wearing a camo puffy. And, you know, he approaches you in your office and says, hey, because that's such a far-off situation that could never happen. You know, he comes up to you and says, hey, man, you know, like, I've always kind of wanted to hunt, but I didn't grow up with it. I don't, like, know anyone that does it. Like, how, what, I don't know. It's like there's a lot to learn. It's a little intimidating. I don't know if it's for me. What should I do? Like, what kind of advice would you give someone like that, or words of wisdom?
So, I've had this. I mean, obviously, I've had this happen, but I have this happen a lot, and I don't know what it is. And sometimes it's people have found me, and maybe it's because, you know, where we used to live. You don't live anymore, but where we used to live, there, you know, hunters were few and far between. There's a lot of hunters in California, but in Southern California, in the music industry, in the festival world, not a lot, you know, probably a handful. It's weird when you do a country show and you have a camp, you know, one of the artists comes in, he has a Kuyu wrapped trailer, and they don't understand what that means. They just think it's funny, you know, some funny pattern. And we were like, we get excited.
Good old John Party.
Yeah, exactly, right?
That dude's tall.
Yeah. Or I have to take away all Guy Fieri's ammo from his vehicle, you know, when he came in.
Oh, my God. So,
kind of thing, give it back to him later. And then find out that all the meat came for, you know, from Texas, from the hunt he came on the way there. But, you know, I normally get, like, a feel, like how serious are they? You know, is this something that they're just kind of feeling the waters? Or is something they're really, really going to do? And somebody that's, like, kind of on the fence, send them some sites and podcasts. I did that with you as well. Yeah. But the ones that are like, I know I want to do this, I just don't know where to start. The first thing I do is, like, hunter safety. Yeah. I just start there because they're going to need it anyway. Like just start there, and that's going to get you used to, you know, at least you get to the first grade of firearm. That's probably about it. But at least you kind of get a feel, and you if they put that kind of effort, because you got to do the class, and then you got to show up.
Well, if they take the time to do that, then, that shows you a lot.
So when they come back from there, then we start looking at, like, okay, you know, and I don't hide anything. I literally lay it out. I'll even lay out my hunt plans. I'm like, look, like, you know, there's some extremes. There's different ways you can go about this. There's the, I don't know what I'm doing, DIY. I'm going to do it on a budget and go as cheap as possible. I'm going to borrow everything that I need. I mean, that, which is a possibility. There's guided, there's self-guided, there's, you know, I go through everything. I've literally broken it all down and say, like, how far do you want to take this? Or is there a particular, you know, is there, what, why? You know, because usually the why is more than anything else. Sometimes they're like, well, you know, my buddy went deer hunting and he came back. I thought that was cool. I you know, it tastes good. You know, sometimes it's about the meat. Sometimes it's, you know, I think everybody is kind of a trophy hunter in their mind of, like, you know, there's two bucks standing there. One's got a big rack. The one with the big rack usually gets shot. In my case, the one, the biggest chest, you know, depends on how big they are, usually gets shot. Can't eat the antlers, so, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's if they get past that point of getting their hunter safety, and then we just start looking, like, normally starting wherever their home state is. You know, hunt at home is cheap. You don't have to pay as much. And then start looking at, like, you know, maybe some over-the-counter, even though there's not really a lot of over-the-counter anymore. But,
yeah.
You know, and then weapon, you know, that's the other thing. It's because there's some people that are terrified of a firearm. They want to go hunting and they're like, I don't know if I could shoot a gun. You know, I've had a few. I've taken a few to the range.
Yep.
And then they're, you know, a firearm is too loud and aggressive, and a bow is way too technical for them. You know, and I'm like, well, you got to figure something out. You can't just throw a rock at them. So, you know, we kind of go through that. But a lot of people have, you know, they've picked up a rifle and they've, you know, or they borrow a rifle. So, you know, normally what it is like, we're all research junkies, you know, if we really admit it. I think that, you know, during, like, you know, tags and draws and everything, that season is just as exciting as actually going on the hunt sometimes. So getting them involved in that, even, you know, finding out, like, here's what I'm doing, you know, look at this, and literally just lay it out. Like, this costs this much, this, you know, this, if you get a tag, or you get a license and you get a tag and you got to pay, you know, a couple extra fees, this is how much it is to hunt an elk here. It's like $1,700 here, it's $800 here, you know, and it, and every year it, it changes and varies, and then the draw, it's like a lotto. Why don't you explain it to people? And you're going to get people that will only go so far. Each person you talk to is like, I'm all in, I'm all in. Whoa, 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 wait a minute, that's way too much. I can't do that. Mm-hmm. Or some people are, they're down to do the tag, or even some people are down to even pay money to, like, get, you know, something guided or even drop camped or getting somebody to scout for them, you know, and pay that a couple of, you know, a couple of $1,000 because they know that that's going to jump them forward a little bit. But then they can borrow gear, you know, it just depends. I mean, you start with a kind of a number. I always tell people start with a number, double it, and then you'll be close. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you know, whatever your drop dead, this is your minimum budget or what you think in your mind, what it's going to be, start and double it. And then you're going to be at the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, of what it really, really costs. And I don't expect people to go out and buy, like, Sitka Kuyu, you know, a Kafaru pack and, you know, some crispy boots right off the bat. You know, you can get away with a lot of, you know, all right, go with somebody. I mean, I go on hunts all the time with people, you know, still to this day. I was like, people get a tag, I'm like, I'll go with you. You know, that it's fun. You get your reps in. That's the other thing is, like, you get time behind the glass and you learn things. I mean, there's times where that benefited your next hunt more than, you know, you finding a deer for them. You know, like coos deer hunting or some type of deer hunting where you're, like, trying to spot these animals and you got, like, you know, four or five of you and then it's fun. You have buddies hanging out at camp or whatever. But, I group camps are a big thing, too. You know, I think that you get a tag somewhere, maybe it's a cow hunt or a spike hunt. Like, especially, you can get a, not even a non-resident can get a spike, you know, you can get a spike hunt here in Utah every year still.
Yeah.
And there's people that have these big camps and they just bring the whole families up and maybe three people have a tag. There's like 15 people there. So, you know, that gets people involved because especially like successful or not, then they understand it. You know, you come back, you didn't get anything, and it's not a big deal. You're like, learn stuff. Then they're not so bummed when they don't, you know, because you're going to eat more tags than you do elk. You know, then that's just a way of life. No one's really that lucky. But, you know, I usually just lay it out for them. But I think the key is to find out, like, the why. Like, what's the reason why you want to do this? You know, you have these, like, CrossFitters that are just like, I need the meat. You know, they're crazy. They're like, I need lean protein. I heard that this is the way to do it. You know, I'm like, well, you know, technically you could go buy a cow too.
Yeah.
You know, do you really want to go out and do this, you know, kind of thing? Or you have the Joe Rogan, you know, just watching like Joe Rogan or, you know, just certain people from 0.0 that went out hunting with, you know, the Ranellas, you know, getting their feet wet kind of thing. Like they wanted not only the experience, you know, people talk about why do you hunt? Like I hunt for the hunt. I really like it. Really comes down to like it took me years to figure that out. It's like, do I hunt for the meat? Yeah, but I could go buy. If it was solely about meat, I could just go buy meat. I mean, I could go to a elk farm somewhere and buy meat. Do I do it because I'm just some crazy psychopathic killer and like to shoot things? Like, yeah, partially that too. That I probably check all the boxes. So technically, all those together is the hunt.
Yeah.
Like I do it for the pursuit, the chase, trying to outwit another animal. You know, if I could hunt people, I probably would. I mean, I have this whole theory on cannibalism being like the solver of like world overpopulation and, you know, world hunger at the same time. That we could save that for another podcast.
That'll definitely be another podcast, I'm sure.
But you know, it's that's the thing is you gotta. Some people don't know. I mean, people are like, well, I just want to try this or I want to go. Those are the people you just like. You know what? Here's the dates for my hunt. Jump in the truck. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, just come with. You've ever been camping before? And some of them they haven't. You know, so you're just like, all right. But I mean, all of us have extra gear. We have extra. You know, I have tents, and now the backpacks are starting to stack up, and you know everything. I come to this show. It's dangerous. You know, I come in and buy stuff I don't even need, but ends up being beneficial for them. You know, usually what I tell them is like, get a pair of boots that actually fit you. And start wearing them now. I did that to you. You wore your boots to the office.
Oh, yeah.
I wear these boots every day. I wear Crispies every single day.
Are those the Colorados?
Yeah. I have five pairs of these things that I need to get. Some of them resold, actually. But
I think I'm at five pairs. My Laponias are just...
Those are your first?
They're beyond rescues. No, my first were the guides.
Oh, that's right.
I got the Ford F-350.
Right. Jesus.
And then I got the Laponias.
Those are some big boots.
Yeah, I got the guides, the Laponias. I got the crossovers, which I'm honestly not a huge fan of.
Yeah.
And I've got the Colorados, which I've been enjoying the Colorados. They just don't break in as quick as the leather ones do.
They have a heel lock on those, right? The heels, the lock, where it locks in your heel?
Yeah.
Pretty sure it does.
Yeah.
I mean, that by far separates Crispy from every other boot that I've tried. It's the fact that heel just kind of locks in.
Yeah.
So it's like instantly, like, just locks it in. Especially if you tie your boots right, you just don't get any heel rub at all.
No rub,
I never have any problem with heel rub. With other boots, before that, I was like doing like Loa Tibets for a while. And if they even started to come loose, your heel starts sliding all over the place. And then you have like sock liners and you're duct taping the back of your heel and everything else. But I always start people with like their feet more than anything else. Because like if they're just going to go with, I mean, they don't really need to train with a pack as much. Like they just got to get their cardio up maybe a little bit. And they're going to get their butt kicked no matter what. I mean, they can do the heavy pack training if they want to go up and down the hill. But they might wear themselves out so much and psych themselves out to the point where they don't even want to go anymore. So just get some boots that fit and we'll, you know, borrow, find, rent, steal, whatever
Big
we need to do
steal, what
to
we
get
need
to get you, there, you know, what you need out there. And the thing is like I've had people that just go out scouting and they like they just sit behind the glass. And then it's funny because you'll get that one person, you know, not in a million years you think they'd ever find anything. And they're like, oh, there's a deer. Oh, there's a deer. And like, how? And they just, you know, maybe they have a knack for it kind of thing. So I think that that's just, you know, that's how you start. Sitting at home trying to collect, you know, every piece of high-end gear and I'm not going until that happens and I need to have the best tag ever. And you're like, it's like people that are just, you know, collecting points and not hunting. Like once you get that coveted tag that you've been waiting 15 years for, you have zero hunts under your belt. What's the point? You know, you're just going to go out there and not know, you know, get all the mistakes done on the cheap tags, over-the-counter stuff or whatever. Get all the, you know, then when the real tag comes in, you're ready to go. You're like, you're ready. And it just boggles my mind that people, you know, they just don't do that. But a lot of new, I think that that's the easiest way to ease somebody into it because they don't know what they don't know. They know the end result. They know, I want to hunt, I want an animal. They don't know anything that happens in between.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't understand even, like, knowing their weapon, practicing with it, knowing their gear, you know, not just, like, knowing your pack, but knowing, like, how to fix stuff when you get out there and on everything. Just we're constantly tweaking with everything when we're in the field and getting everything done anyway. It's like they're not going to know any different. They're just going to set their pack down, and if something goes wrong, they're just going to go home. You know, that's usually what it is. But you got to know how to get around road systems, how to draw. You know, you got to know that like five of your first picks on your roads are probably going to be shut down or closed gates that you just wasted a half a tank of gas to get to. So, you know, if you follow somebody along and they get to see that and observe it, that's the next level. Like they go through and they see all that success or not, they're going to decide like, I get why you do this. And I get it. That's fun. It's a challenge. Don't always get some, but I'm down for that. That's what I was looking for. You get the other people who are like, you know what? I thought I wanted to do this. Oh, hell no. It's not happening. Like you can bring some meat over when you get done.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's cool. And that's cool too. But at least now you have a person that like, they understand, respect what it takes. And they've already given in, like, that's not for them. It's too much for them. But when it comes down to, you know, voting the right direction or something comes up that
they're going to understand.
That's a non-hunting ally that you have that, you know, that it comes down to. And they're just going to, you know, maybe they'll come around later on, or maybe there's something else. Like you might, you know, everybody wants to go on elk hunt right off the bat. You know, I remember growing up that like when you started with a 22 and you went rabbit hunting and then you worked your way up to maybe a shotgun and you know, duck hunted and small animals, and then you worked into deer, and then you worked into bigger animals. And it's like nowadays, it's like you have kids, they're like, going elk hunting. What are you talking about? I'm a sheep hunt. You know, that's what they want to draw a sheep tag. They've never been on a hunt in their life. So it's just a little bit different mentality. And we talk about, you know, there's not enough hunters. The hunter recruitment is going down, but we can't get enough tags, like, which means that there's more. So I think that instead of everybody going into hunting and starting at the ground level and working their way up, giving time for all that to kind of come to fruition as far as like them getting a tag. They're going straight into the draws. They're going straight into
skipping straight to the top.
They're skipping straight to the top. And it, you know, it's just not what it used to be. It used to be people used to get a hunting license. A lot of people, they would just get it. Like it was I might need this.
Yeah.
You know, or it was for hunt camp because they just did it every year. And they just, you know, they lived in Michigan. They're like, well, time to get a hunting license. They might not even go. But that money went into conservation and everything else. Now it's like, I'm not buying it unless I get a tag. I'm not going to, I'm only buying points and I know I can't draw. Like, I'm not going to buy a hunting license. Like, that's making that number going down. And that's hurting, you know, in the long run. I mean, luckily we have like, you know, Mule Deal Foundation and, you know, all these different people kind of putting money in, buying property and doing things, that's helpful. But if that wasn't there, when we were on our own, we'd be kind of screwed. You know, that's the whole thing is we would be, you know, everybody's kind of for themselves. We talked about earlier, like we'll size each other up at a hunt show. But then when it comes to like voicing and coming, saying something to the public, we just don't, you know, or very few do. So. But yeah, it's a challenge. But it's something like as I get older, I get more and more like I am turning into Randy Newberg. I think I'm getting to the point where I want to pick fights. I'm choosing my fights, but I'm definitely want to pick some more fights. I literally want to like fight for. I'm fighting for my sons to be able to hunt when they get to that age. That's where it comes down to. And you know, if I don't do it, you know. No one else does it, then it's going to be gone. It'll just be gone. So it's where I'm at right now.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm glad we finally got to – we've kind of been talking about this for, like, the past three years.
Right? Yeah. We constantly – like, there's been times where you're, like, you're doing a podcast with somebody, and my wife and I walk by, and then we won't see each other for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And then the next day we'll see each other, like, oh, yeah, maybe later. And then, you know.
That's why this time, the second I saw you, I'm like, we're going to record this podcast today.
It's funny, because I left the building, like, three times from the time you're like, okay, like, maybe between this time and this time. And then, like, my pack was full. I had all this crap I had to go. I literally, like, instead of taking the car out of parking, I jumped on one of these rental scooters and I like bolted down to the hotel, which was like five blocks away. And I dropped I emptied everything out and I came back. And then when I came back, I had to like do something else. And it worked out. It worked out.
I'm glad. Oh, definitely glad we got it done.
You didn't have power cord.
Yeah, then didn't have the power cord. Thankful to Guy Duplanchier.
Nice.
Duplancher of Western Contours for the four AAAs. So go give him some love too. But yeah, man. Yeah, we did it.
It's cool. Cool catching up.
All right, y'all. That'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com. Get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. That'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time. But until then, I hope this episode inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. And head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.
I'm Will Cooper, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. If you haven't already, download the free Waypoint TV app to listen to our podcast and watch the original films from Hunt Stand Presents anywhere, anytime, and on any device.
Through the Blackwater Bayous and in the dark Louisiana night floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking. From the Mississippi Delta in Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinner's crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.